It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. Craig Way with you up here in Omaha, Nebraska. Jeff Howe down in the ARN studios, along with our producer, Snoop Daniel. We're with you up until noon. Shirts and Skins returns to its full uniformed and ununiformed, but informed status today. Chad Hastings back from vacation, so it'll be Chad and Trey at noon. RBKD, the triple option. Rod Babers, Brad Kellner, Kevin Dunn coming up. And that'll be in the afternoon show after that. So we soldier on with hour number two. Now, if you joined us late in the first half hour of the program, Jeff was still putting the finishing touches on the Blitz podcast. So that comes your way wherever you get your podcasts. And at Horns 24/7 as well. And then, of course, it'll air tomorrow night. Here on the Horn. It'll air tomorrow night in its normal 7 o'clock start, not be preempted by Longhorn Baseball because the Longhorns won't be playing tomorrow night because they have to play an elimination game tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock against the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll have it for you on the Horn, 12:45 of the airtime. 1 o'clock, the first pitch. Tristan Stevens will go for Texas, and the hard-throwing freshman right-hander Blade Tidwell will counter for the Volunteers. Blade. Other than hockey, I think that's a pretty good name for sports, especially for a pitcher. Don't you think, Jeff? Blade for a pitcher?
You know, that name, I've only other heard that name in one other place, and it's only because I saw a documentary on him several years ago. Bret Hart, the famous wrestler, named one of his kids Blade. It's the only other time I've heard that used as a first name, yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah, so Blade Tidwell, the freshman right-hander, will go for Tennessee. And if you're wondering about Blade Tidwell's numbers, 10-3, a 3.57 ERA, 87 strikeouts to 32 walks, 5 wild pitches, 4 hit batters. I've heard him described as effectively wild and has good stuff. So it'll be a challenge, no question about it. Also like what the Longhorns have to counter with Tristan Stevens tomorrow. So should be quite the battle tomorrow afternoon. It was set up and has to be tomorrow afternoon, Jeff, because of what happened last night. I know you haven't had a chance to get your thoughts on Game 1 for the Longhorns last night. Disappointing 2-1 loss to Mississippi State. I know how folks, and completely understandably so, are going to fixate on the 21 Longhorns who went down via the strikeout. 15 from Will Bednar, 6 from Landon Sims, and a spirited rally in the ninth with the Mike Antico leadoff home run. By the way, tomorrow morning on the program, we should expect to have a conversation with Mike Antico on the program that you will be able to bring, Jeff. I'll be over at the ballpark tomorrow, but we should be able to have that tomorrow with Mike Antico. But, you know, started with his home run, then after Mitchell Daly was retired, and then Zach Zubia struck out or grounded out. So Daly struck out, Zubia grounded out, so there were 2 outs. 1 an at-bat from Ivan Melendez, a 10-pitch at-bat from down on the count, 0-2, just kind of toughed his way through it, found a way to drive one through on the left side for a base hit, lifted for the pinch runner, Dylan Campbell. Cam Williams gets down on the count, 0-2, fights back, gets a base hit. You have runners on the corners with 2 down, and Doug Hodel, it was clear what Douglas was trying to do. He was trying to push it through on the right side there on a 2-0 count, figured he'd get a good pitch to hit, tried to push it through on the right side, but the play was made by Scotty DeBrule, the second baseman, to throw him out and in the ball game. So the Longhorns are in the elimination round. So your thoughts on last night, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I mean, look, the 21 strikeouts was what it was. I mean, and David Pierce even said postgame with us, they didn't do a really good job throughout the game of making adjustments. We saw some of what makes this team special. which is Craig, elite pitching and elite defense. And with the exception of the two plays for Hodo and right field, and I asked David Pierce about this post game, and it sounded like for, you know, outfielders, I mean, we saw Rowdy Jordan have to adjust to a couple balls that were breaking in late because of the wind. The combination of the wind, the shadows, and you're learning the dimensions of a new ballpark for the first time, it was basically kind of worst-case scenario for everybody playing the outfield yesterday. That said, you know, other than the two plays, you know, by Hodo and Wright defensively and the one error by Faltini in the first inning that ended up not hurting them, they were elite defensively, especially Silas Ardoin behind the plate. Like, I've had a lot of conversations, Craig, with people on the flagship message board at Hornets 24/7 about, hey, you know, Ardoin, he doesn't hit all the time. You know, why can't you go to Petrinski more, or should you sub him more? I'm like, look, the reason why Cy is in the lineup is because he's an elite defensive catcher, and we saw that last night. And even the Cameron James steal of second, Craig, you had a good look at that. I mean, that you couldn't have made a better throw than he made, and you're about just maybe a half step away from getting the out there. It's just, and even, I mean, who knows, if Trey Faltini's glove is in a different spot, you might have a chance to get him there. But the one,
and he winds up getting him at third anyway.
Got him at third anyway.
Steal third afterwards.
Yeah, so you can't ask Silas Ardoin to do a better job. And look, that's Ty Madden's guy. If Ty Madden's on the mound, Silas Ardoin's going to be behind the plate regardless. But defensively, they were elite last night. And Ty Madden, we talked about it, Craig. What was David Pierce going to do against a team that hunts fastballs? It's a really good fastball hitting team. Were you going to go with Ty Madden? They had already seen him once this year. And that decision paid off. And look, Ty's gotten through some games where maybe he has a clunky inning or things get kind of mucked up in the middle innings. But start to finish, he was really good last night and gave you everything that you could have possibly asked for him. You got 26 really good pitches out of Pete Hansen in two shutout innings. They just didn't swing the bat very well. They just weren't very good at the plate making contact, period, point blank, end of story. I do think, though, Craig, the one positive, I think, to take away from what you saw at the plate last night is you hope what you saw in the ninth inning, specifically from Zubia working a walk, Ivan Melendez getting a single on a well-hit ball at the end of a 12-pitch at-bat, and then the Cam Williams single, you hope that stuff carries over, because as good as Mike Antico is at setting the table, David Pierce loves Eric Kennedy's speed at the bottom of the lineup, Faltini's handled the bat really well in the postseason, you're going to be done here pretty quick if the three guys in the middle of that lineup don't produce. So for those three guys to all contribute to that ninth inning rally, that's something that if you're David Pierce and you're Troy Tulowitzki, I think that's what you hope carries over to tomorrow.
I agree. I asked David after game one of the Super Regional Series. Remember, Melendez, Williams, and Hodo went a combined 0 for 12 in game one against South Florida.
Right.
And I asked him about how much do you have to do or say at this point in the season, although it's obviously it's the most important time of the season, to the heart of your lineup or the middle of your lineup, the 4, 5, and 6 guys, when the three of them go a combined 0 for 12. He said, not an awful lot. We just need to remind them about the importance of being on time, with a fastball, ahead with the fastball, and back on the breaking ball, not the other way around. And I think that was the case a lot the other way around. There was a lot more guessing than I've seen in a while, because you'd have guys come back to the dugout after they took a called third strike right on the outside corner or off the plate, depending on whether you agreed with the home plate umpire, Steve Mattingly, because I know there was a lot of debate about that. But they would go back to the dugout, and then the next guy, feeling compelled that I can't get called down on strikes, I got to go up there and do something, and then expand the zone and chase something. That's the vortex they got caught in last night with a lot of that. And let's also give a lot of credit to Bednar. Great movement on his fastball. He didn't have overpowering stuff. It kind of reminded me of what Greg Maddux used to do. Greg Maddux was high 80s to low 90s with his fastball, but had pinpoint control. And I don't know if Bednar had pinpoint control, but it was good enough to keep them off balance and put them in a bad spot. So, like you said, the plate discipline they showed in the ninth with the lengthy at-bat from Melendez and then all the fouling off pitches and then getting one through, and then Cam doing the same thing. Yeah, that's some, because as you know, there are a few things more deflating to a hitter psychologically than striking out. And when you do it 21 times in a ball game, it really can bring you down. But the competitive ninth inning they had, I think, would have them feeling a little bit better about themselves going into, is that they're on the field right now at Abraham Lincoln High here in Omaha, going through a practice right now, and that they're going to feel a little bit better about themselves going into the game tomorrow against Tennessee.
And it's not just 94 with control, Craig. I saw a lot. Well, I can't believe guys can't hit a 91-mile-an-hour fastball. This is ridiculous. Well, it's not the velo that's the problem. And I don't think, Craig, it's even what you talked about with the control that's the problem. And maybe this does go into control. When you're throwing in that 91 to 94 range, but it's elevated late, and you get that late movement on it, you can guess wrong a lot of the time. If it's a fastball that's got late movement in it when it's breaking across the plate, and you see it almost explode across the plate. So at that point, to a hitter, 91 or 92 can look a lot like 96 or 97 just because it's got that late break or that late elevation to it. So, I mean, look, the high strikeout numbers have been a problem for this team in some of the losses this year and some of the losses they have faced elite pitching. I think what you kind of hope for, Craig, and look, even though you're in Omaha now, right, everybody's got depth on their pitching staff. What you hope for is, like we started to see in the Big 12 tournament and like we saw throughout weekend series, as teams get deeper into their staff. And look, we know the deeper you get into this Texas staff, you've still got three quality arms. And I think, you know, the way it worked last night, Craig, they could bring it, if they make it to Thursday, you can still bring Pete Hansen in and have him go Thursday, you piggyback him with Cole Quintanilla or Tanner Witt, kind of whatever you got to do to figure it out. I'm sure David Pierce and Sean Allen have a plan for how they're going to go about that. But what you're banking on is maybe by the time you get into a team, certain number two starter, certainly their number three starter, that you've seen elite pitching enough that then you're making adjustments, that then you can, you know, have the kind of production that you want. That's not ideal, but hey, you're in the loser's bracket right now, so nothing is going to be ideal from this standpoint. No, if you're going to get out of this thing.
And very few things are off the table right now. So, you know, position A isn't an option right now, which could have been within their sights with a win last night. Didn't happen. So now you pivot, you figure out where you need to go with it next. Well, Tristan Stevens obviously gets the balls, gets the ball as he has all season long, and when they need something from him, he has delivered. So they're going to need that from Tristan tomorrow. So you have that. Then there's an off day. You win that game, then there's an off day. I think the plan, and I haven't talked to David about this yet because, like I said, they went to practice this morning, and I couldn't go to practice with them today because we had the program today. But I think the plan is they're going to, I'm just me guessing here, but I think the plan is to go with Tristan, and if you can get a good 6-7 innings out of him, then you either have Quintanilla or Tanner Witt, in all probability, Witt, finish the ball game. Mm-hmm. You get a day off Wednesday, you come back Thursday, start Hansen, who only threw 26 pitches last night, yep. That's 3 days before the next, start Hansen and see how far you can go, and if you have a chance to pair that up with either Witt and or Nixon, get that done, get it to now the point where you've got to beat a team twice, once on Friday, once on Saturday, you come back and you start Cole Quintanilla, perhaps on Friday. So, and that does not preclude Cole from pitching tomorrow and then being able to come back and do a Friday start. This is just me guessing right now. And he and Sean Allen are going through all of this and trying to figure out what the pitching plan is. But again, at this point, you try to find a way to piecemeal a path to get you to the bracket championship of Friday and Saturday. So you're working at it. Yeah, you're working at it one game at a time, but also kind of a two games, because you got to get two single elimination games against single teams, Tennessee tomorrow and then either Virginia or Mississippi State on Thursday. Then the winner of that Mississippi State-Virginia game, you've got to beat twice, Friday and then Saturday, and you deal with that as a separate thing. And you work toward that and see if you can push through that and get to the championship on Monday, or starting on Monday. So there's a lot of different paths to go, and they do have plenty of pitching left. But clearly it's a much more difficult path to have to traverse on that.
And this is why, Craig, this is why those teams have been so good in Omaha when you win the first game, because especially if you can win the second game and get that extra day off and rest some of your bullpen arms, you're really in the catbird seat. It's not impossible to get to the championship series from the loser's bracket, but, you know, just like 14, that Vanderbilt team was just a little bit fresher. And granted, credit that 14 team for getting that winner-take-all to extra innings, but that helps when you get that extra day off.
Yep. Yeah. I got a text from Nathan Thornhill this morning, and, of course, Nate one of our broadcast partners on the games this season, and Thornhill pitched in that 2014 World Series, and he said, last time we lost 2-1 to open the College World Series. Had forgotten about the final score of that game against Irvine was 2-1. We were one game, one run away from playing for the national championship when all was said and done. This team has more talent than we did. Hope they'll go have some fun during these next four games leading up to the Natty. So coming from a learned opinion, Nathan Thornhill, part of the team member, and you're going to have to get a really good starting effort from probably your next two guys. And remember that 2014 Texas team did that. Parker French was masterful in his one outing. I think that was against Louisville.
Louisville, yeah.
And then they got another good one.
And then
so,
Chad Hollingsworth in the second game against
first
Irvine.
Game of Vanderbilt. Yeah, that's right, against Irvine, the second game. The 1-0 game where Hinojosa's home run is the difference in the ball game. So you're right. So you're going to have those kinds of efforts step up to do that. So anyway, that's what's in front of them right now. So practice today and get ready to go back at it. Meanwhile, elimination game today, the Pac-12 Invitational, Arizona and Stanford start at 1:00. And as I was saying in the first hour, Jeff, the way the College World Series quite often unfolds, the national seeds, it's proven that the seeds don't necessarily matter that much. Yes, you still have national seeds playing, and you have national seeds unbeaten, like Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, the 4 and the 7. You have that. But you have the 5 seed against the 9 seed in an elimination game today, and you have the 2 seed against the 3 seed in an elimination game tomorrow. And you have two teams completely unseeded, North Carolina State and Virginia, who have won their first two games. Their first games. One thing I thought was interesting from Brian O'Connor, the Virginia coach, listening to the press conference after they shut out Tennessee yesterday, was a reporter asked him, is it a relief getting the first one in the win column instead of having to deal with the loser's bracket? And I found his answer interesting. He said, yeah, it's always nice to win. He said, but really and truly, all we've kind of done is hold serve. We're where we were coming in. It's getting to 2-0 that's the key. He said, because if we lose tomorrow, we're no different than the team that lost today if they win the second game. He said, we're in the exact same boat. So the key is to get to 2-0. Obviously, that isn't an option for Texas now. They're going to be facing a team, however, that is 1-1 and coming off a loss if the Longhorns can find a way to get past Tennessee tomorrow. That's going to be the key there. Coming up, we do have another edition of The Notebook. Jeff, with some more tidbits coming your way. We've got some other things to get to as we continue with Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com. I don't think the Longhorn pitching staff is running on empty just yet. After all, they only used 2 pitchers last night. Ty Madden, 7 innings. Pete Hansen, 2 innings of relief. Jeff, before we get to The Notebook, just, you know, we didn't say that much about Ty Madden, but he gave them what they needed. If the offense had been on task, what Ty Madden and Pete Hansen did would have been more than enough to secure the win last night.
I mean, like we talked about it, I wasn't, and it's nothing against Ty Madden. I just feel like Mississippi State might be a bad matchup for him because you've got, you know, like most SEC teams, they hunt fastballs. They're a really good fastball hitting team. They're aggressive. And, you know, it's kind of like we've seen from some of Ty's outings this year, Craig. I mean, he used the changeup a little bit, and I know that's a pitch he's tinkered with, but And when his slider is on, when he can use it in the right way and counts, when it's advantageous to him and he can locate it, that pitch is damn near unhittable. And it was for the most part last night.
Yeah. All right. It is time now for another edition of The Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cptours.com.
Kind of to wrap up that point, Craig, before we move on to some football, if going into that game, you say, if you tell David Pierce, hey, here's what you're going to get from Ty Madden, seven complete, four hits, two runs, 10 strikeouts on 105 pitches, and only one of those four hits he gives up is for extra bases, David Pierce probably thinks he's winning that baseball game.
Yep. I know he would feel real good about this. Hey, I have to ask you something before we move to some football notes. Help me out with something here, Jeff. You were on the Zoom last night, the post-game Zoom.
Right.
We carried it live because here at the College World Series, we're not allowed to have on-field interviews of any kind. In the past,
oh, that's right, yeah.
In the past, we've been able to do on-field interviews like, say, with like we did with Sean Allen 3 years ago and a quote-unquote non-designated player that wasn't going for the press conference. So we could do that. But this year with extra protocols in place and we being quote-unquote tier three, even though we've traveled with the team all year long, it doesn't matter in the eyes of the NCAA. So we have to stay in the press box. So up in the broadcast booth, I said, okay, even in those years, though, when we did the on-field post-game interviews, we would still carry the head coach's post-game press conference because we wanted to hear what the head coach had to say and the designated players. We've always done that, and that's what we did again last night. Now, the plan was, this is how it was explained to us, there are two press conferences going on simultaneously. Jake Lemonis, the head coach of Mississippi State, would be going the same time as David Pierce. And so, in other words, that they had decided that whichever team was the winning team would go first. Now, we were wired in to be able to carry it live, but the only one that would be live would be the winning team. They, for whatever reason, they couldn't separate the feeds. So they said, if you want to carry, if your team is the losing team and you want to carry the news conference live, you have to do it through the Zoom link. So that's what we did. But this is what it came across to us, because our producer, John Reichel, who was really tuned right into it, said, okay, they're announcing, here comes Coach Pierce. So I said, let's go down for Coach Pierce. And then you hear Ty Madden talking. And I said, well, that's Ty Madden there. And then, and so there was that bit of confusion. And then Coach Pierce came in afterwards and did his. But I have two questions for you.
Okay.
One, when you were in the standby mode listening for that, because John Reichel said he swore he heard the press conference moderator say, stand by, Coach Pierce is coming in now. And then it was Ty Madden. All right, did you hear something like that? And everybody was expecting David, and all of a sudden it was Ty Madden. Did you hear that?
Not that I remember. From what I remember, it was just Ty sitting up there, and we.
Okay, yeah. Okay. It might have been, you know, just he heard it down the line doing that. Okay, so there's one thing.
Well, there's a lot of confusion because it seemed like the feeds were getting crossed because I could hear. Yep. I don't know who the Mississippi State player available was.
It was Jake Lemonis. Oh. You heard him. They started with the head coach like we were told it was going to be.
Okay, so I guess Chris Lemonis was going, and then I could
hear. Yeah, I said Jake. Chris Lemonis.
We could hear Mississippi State reporters asking questions. So the very start of Ty's presser, there was definitely confusion.
Some bleed over.
Yeah, wires getting crossed.
Yeah, okay. So you had that happening. Now, at any point, did you hear the press conference moderator say the name Zach Zubia?
Not that I recall, no.
No. In fact, I checked with Kevin Rodriguez this morning. He said, we have a group text they set up for us to let us know who's coming. He goes, I specifically said to them, Ty Madden is coming first, followed by Coach Pierce. So Ty did come in and sit down. But you know where I'm going with this. Our good friend Kirk Bowles of the Austin American-Statesman asked, I don't know if he could see, maybe he just couldn't see Ty at the time, but he said, Zach, can you talk about blah, 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 blah? And the hitter's struggling, and he's like, well, I'm a pitcher, so I didn't pay that much attention.
Of course, the question is brought up, Ty's looking around the room like, am I getting pumped or something? Yeah.
Yeah, right. So it happened. So just as the postscript to that, just so you'll know, Jeff, at breakfast this morning, early this morning, having breakfast downstairs. Ty walks into the room, and he asks Kevin Rodriguez, "Hey, did Kirk Bowles think I was Zach?" And he said, "Yeah, I guess that was the deal." So I just wondered if they at any point did the moderator say Zach Zuby would be coming in, but even though Kevin Rodriguez said Zach's name was never brought up, it was always only going to be Ty Madden because it was supposed to be one player, and then the head coach. So it was going to be Ty Madden, and then it was going to be Coach Pierce. So there was a little bit of confusion, and like you said, some bleed over from the other news conference. So the NCAA is trying to work through some of those bugs also.
Yeah.
Just that's why I was curious about what you heard with that.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, there was just a lot of confusion early on. And I don't know, for some reason, anytime I'm on a Zoom call, no matter what internet I'm connected to, it just doesn't come through very well. So Zoom's been
well, and I don't know that it was as much you, Jeff, as it was they were having trouble, the NCAA, with bandwidth and things.
Okay.
We had, on three occasions, John Reichel told me, we had dropout in the broadcast, ranging anywhere from 3 to 5 seconds. But there was dropouts during our broadcast at points. And I think that's the infrastructure set up inside TD Ameritrade Park was struggling to handle everything that was going down with bandwidth and all that stuff. I think that was the problem.
If only they had just allowed in-person stuff, you know.
Could have avoided a lot of it. Absolutely.
I digress.
Yes.
Do we need some interstitial to get to the notebook here real quick, Snoop?
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
There's
the answer to your question right there, yeah.
So we got a few more cuts from Steve Sarkisian. This is from last Thursday. He was the keynote speaker at the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Austin area, their summer luncheon. And this is not from the little press conference he did, Craig. These cuts are exclusive to us, to the Horn, because I was able to get Sark for a one-on-one briefly. And these are kind of the three choice cuts from that. We won't have time to get into all of them today. We'll get into one to start the week, because we are, Craig, 75 days away from kickoff. And, can go down the list of Longhorns who have worn 75 on the current team. How about Junior Anguilau? And, look, I love when we get into the 70s and 60s and even some of the 50s, because it just gives me a reason, like I need one, to talk about the offensive line.
Late Lionel Gar, right?
Yeah.
Remember him?
Junior Anguilau is one of those guys. Octavius Bishop wore 75 during his time on the 40 Acres. Junior Anguilau was one of those guys, Craig, under Kyle Flood, that falls into that blue chip category, a highly recruited guy, but a guy that really needed to hone his skills technically. Played in a triple option offense in high school, hadn't done a ton of pass pro, period, by the time he got to Texas. So can Kyle Flood clean up a guy's game like Junior Anguilau? And that's a guy, Craig, we've seen him at times be really good, dominant at times in the run game, but becoming a complete interior offensive lineman, what Kyle Flood does with a guy like Junior Anguilau, that's going to give you a really good idea of how this staff is going to be working with and developing offensive linemen down the road. Well, we talk about the offensive line, but the most important part of that kind of interior mix, if you will, for Texas at the point of attack along the line of scrimmage, their job is to protect the quarterback first and foremost. And I even asked Sark this during the interview. I said, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about quarterback. This was Sark, and the question was, Craig, I said, what is that checklist? By the time you get to August, what does that checklist need to look like for Casey Thompson and Hudson Card to be in a position to go win this job by the time you get to camp? What do those guys need to get accomplished this summer?
Well, I think that's the key. You know, we exited spring practice. You know, we met with both of them individually at length. I think both of them have things that we want them to work on. And then when we come back for training camp, you know, their ability to apply the things that we wanted them to work on and still build on the things that they were doing well. And then ultimately, it's going to come down to what feels right to me. It's not about how big, how fast, how strong, how far you can throw the ball. It's about who can lead the team and who can move the football and take care of the ball and score points. And with that being said, the other guy, whoever that is that's a tall task too, to be the next guy, mm-hmm. and to prepare like you are the starter, knowing, you know, at the drop of a hat, one play, and you're in the game and having the lead. So both of them are big jobs, and we just want to make sure we're giving them ample opportunity to provide themselves a chance to earn the job.
This goes back, Craig, to also, it's funny, that was Sark's answer, and then on Friday we had our conversation with Colt McCoy, and I asked Colt, because Craig, tell me this doesn't make you feel old, 15 years ago this summer, 15 years ago, right now, Colt McCoy was locked in a quarterback battle with Jevon Snead to earn the right to be the guy.
I loved his response to you.
Vince Young.
I loved his response to you. He said, let me tell you something. I was in a quarterback battle every year. He said that because he said Mac didn't want anybody to feel too comfortable.
Yeah, I could appreciate what Colt was saying, but I think we all know.
We all knew better, though, by the time he was certainly by the time he was a junior, if not even a sophomore.
But that first year, Craig. And granted, college football at that, even at that position, it's a world of difference then to now. But whoever doesn't win this quarterback battle, and now you've got the transfer portal, and it's easier for guys to move on if you don't win the job. Whoever the number two guy is, man, you might just want to stick it out and be prepared, because if you feel it's that close, you could think, look, I'm one bad quarter, a couple of bad drives, let alone an injury away from being the guy and getting my chance. So, man, it's key. Whichever guy doesn't win this job, I know we all want to assume transfer portal. And, look, maybe that's the way things go, depending on when Sark feels comfortable enough to make that call. But I do like the fact – I've said this before, I'll say it again. I like the fact that legitimately Sark has had both of these guys enter the summer feeling like they can go win the job. They've got a really good chance to go win it. But, again, whoever finishes second in this deal – I think from a Texas standpoint, you, with all due respect to Charles Wright, and I like a lot of things about his game, you don't want to be in a position where you've got a guy that's yet to take a collegiate snap coming in as a true freshman, being your backup quarterback. You'd like both of these guys to stick it out. And you would hope the guy that doesn't win it keeps that mentality of, look, I really might be a couple of bad plays away from this being my job and this being my opportunity. So don't sleep on that. It might sound like coach speak or player speak, but – whoever that number two guy is, your chance to be the guy at Texas, it probably most likely won't end with whatever that decision is by Sark at the end of camp or whenever he decides to make it.
Coaches are always fond of saying they're a sprained ankle away from being the starting quarterback.
But that's true. I mean,
I've heard that for decades.
other than that quarter, and I can't stress this enough, other than that quarter and a half Casey Thompson got in the Alamo Bowl, neither of these guys has taken a meaningful snap, meaning you're going to go through ups and downs with both of these guys. Think about that slow burn that it took for Sam Ehlinger to get to the point where you felt like you could trust him week in and week out. It definitely wasn't year one, and it wasn't the start of year two. You got about halfway, almost to the end of year two, before you feel like, okay, you feel like he's kind of at least figured it out to where at least you can trust him. And then we know Sam took off and his name is splattered all over the record books, but only second to Colt in just about every meaningful statistical category. But it took you a while to get there. And I just think with the ups and downs you're going to go through, regardless of who the guy is, man, that second guy just needs to be at the ready because, again, you know, you're probably, in a perfect world if you're Sark, going to need both of these guys to get you through the season.
Yep. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that's why I think they're preparing for that. All right, there's our edition of The Notebook for this hour. We'll be back to wrap up Light the Tower here on the Horn.
Oh, wow.
Light the Tower.
Well, we're done for today. Again, here's kind of the breakdown tomorrow. With a 1 o'clock game tomorrow, I won't be on the program. But let me amend that a little bit, Jeff. I think I may be in position to be able to check in with you guys during the second hour of the program tomorrow from the ballpark.
We will
from TD Ameritrade.
Yeah, I need to have a conversation with our fearless leader Chad Hastings, and we'll see, because Shirts and Skins obviously won't have a full show tomorrow, so we'll figure it out.
That's true too.
Yeah. I'll hit you up later, Craig. Hey, real quick, I just need to read this. I'm getting caught up on the Supreme Court decision, the 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court against the NCAA. Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote the concurring opinion, and Jay Billis has put a lot of this out on his Twitter account. And, Craig, this is the one that really jumped out to me. This is from Justice Kavanaugh's opinion. Quote, the NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. That's just a snippet from just the Supreme Court blistering the NCAA today.
More to that, more of that to come, coming up on Shirts and Skins. Thanks to Snoop Daniel, our producer, for my co-host Jeff Howe. I'm Craig Way. Thanks for joining us. We'll visit with you next time on Light the Tower.